A reading from Leviticus, chapter 25, verses 10 to 39. Consecrate the 50th year and proclaim liberty throughout the land to all its inhabitants. It shall be a jubilee for you. Each one of you is to return to his family property and each to his own clan. The 50th year shall be a jubilee for you. Do not sow and do not reap what grows of itself or harvest the untended vines. For it is a jubilee and is to be holy for you. Eat only what is taken directly from the fields. In this year of jubilee, everyone is to return to his own property. If you do not sell land to one of your countrymen or buy any from him, do not take advantage of each other. You are to buy from your countrymen on the basis of the number of years since your jubilee. And he is to sell to you on the basis of the number of years left for harvesting crops. When the years are many, you are to increase the price. And when the years are few, you are to decrease the price. Because what he is really selling you is the number of crops. Do not take advantage of each other, but fear your God, for I am the Lord your God. Follow my decrees and be careful to obey my laws, and you would live safely in the land. Then the land will yield its fruit, and you will eat your fill and live there in safety. You may ask, what will we eat in the seventh year if we do not plant or harvest our crops? I will send you such a blessing in the sixth year that the land will yield enough for 3 years. While you plant during the eighth year, you will eat from the old crop and will continue to eat from it until the harvest of the ninth year comes in. Land must not be sold permanently, because the land is mine, and you are but aliens and my tenants. Throughout the country that you hold as possession, you must provide for the redemption of the land. If one of your countrymen becomes poor and sells some of his property, his nearest relative is to come and redeem what his countryman has sold. If, however, a man has no one to redeem it for him, but he himself prospers and acquires sufficient means to redeem it, he is to determine the value for the years since he sold it and refund the balance to the man whom he sold it. He can then go back to his own property. But if he does not acquire the means to repay him, what he sold will remain in the possession of the buyer until the year of Jubilee. It will be returned in the Jubilee, and he can go back to his property. If a man sells a house in a walled city, he retains the right of redemption a full year after its sale. During that time, he may redeem it. If it is not redeemed before a full year has passed, the house in the walled city shall belong permanently to the buyer and his descendants. It is not to be returned in the Jubilee. But houses in villages without walls around them are to be considered as open country. They can be redeemed, and they are to be returned in the Jubilee. The Levites always have the right to redeem their houses in the Levitical towns which they possess. So the property of the Levites is redeemable, that is, a house sold in any town they hold and is to be returned in the Jubilee, because the houses in the towns of the Levites are their property among the Israelites. But the pasture land belonging to their towns must not be sold. It is their permanent possession. If one of your countrymen becomes poor and is unable to support himself among you, help him as you would an alien or a temporary resident, so that he can continue to live among you. Do not take interest of any kind from him, but fear your God, so that your countrymen may continue to live among you. You must not lend him money at interest or sell him food at a profit. I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of Egypt to give you the land of Canaan and to be your God. If one of your countrymen becomes poor among you and sells himself to you, do not make him work as a slave.
The Gospel reading is from Luke chapter 4, beginning at verse 14. Jesus returned to Galilee in the power of the Spirit, and news about him spread throughout the whole countryside. He taught in their synagogues, and everyone praised him. He went to Nazareth, where he had been brought up, and on the Sabbath day he went into the synagogue, as was his custom. And he stood up to read. The scroll of the prophet Isaiah was handed to him. Unrolling it, he found the place where it is written, "The Spirit of the Lord is on me, because he has appointed me to preach good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of the sight for the blind, to release the oppressed, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." Then he rolled up the scroll, gave it back to the attendants, and sat down. The eyes of everyone in the synagogue was fastened on him, and he began by saying to them, "Today this scripture is fulfilled in your hearing." The next reading is from Romans chapter 8, beginning at verse 14. Those who are led by the Spirit of God are sons of God. For you did not receive a spirit that makes you a slave again to fear, but you received the spirit of sonship, and by him we cry, "Abba, Father." The Spirit itself testifies with our spirit that we are God's children.
Well, thank you so much for your kind invitation to come and speak to you. I'm a volunteer speaker with Tear Fund. In my day job, I'm actually a software engineer, and I work for a company that makes the Hive home system of this wonderful Internet of Things that I'm still trying to decide whether that's actually a good thing for humanity or not. I worship at Eden Baptist Church in Cambridge, where I'm one of the deacons, and in our kind of denomination, that just means I help look after the church fabric and the finances and so on, and be a general dog's body, be the first there and open up and the last one to go home and lock up on when it's my turn to do those sorts of things. So I bring you brotherly and sisterly greetings from there. And I also want to thank you as a church for your faithful support to Tear Fund, both corporately as a church and as individually down the years. It really is appreciated. Now, do we have any historians among us today? I've got a list of historic events and significant moments which all took place in the same year. And I'm going to read out each one in turn. And if you think you know the year, stand up. Okay? As soon as you think you know. So let's go. This was the year that Boeing introduced the first 747 jumbo jet, a game changer in the world of aviation. This was the year that two black athletes staged a silent demonstration against racial discrimination at the Mexico City Summer Olympics by raising a black gloved fist, don't say anything, raising a black gloved fist during the national anthem after being presented with their gold and bronze medals. I'll come back to you. This was the year that the first manned spacecraft orbited the moon on Christmas Eve, no less. This is where I guessed it. Oh, we've got another one. This was the year that Manchester United won the European Cup final, becoming the first English team to do so. Let's identify the Man United fans. Ah, good. This was the year that the 39-year-old civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated in Memphis, Tennessee. It was a year of triumph and tragedy. But which year was it? And as the first to stand, you have first shout. 1968 is correct. Well done, sir. Please take your seats. Among the other historic events that took part in that year, 1968 was also the year that Tearfund was born. So that means that 2018 marks 50 years of Tearfund. And now we've just had a rather lengthy reading from Leviticus 25 about how the 50th year held great significance for the Israelites. According to the law, the 50th year was the year of Jubilee, and that was about restoration of a good way of life in which God's redeemed, liberated people could flourish. And as we in Tearfund look back over the last 50 years, we see countless examples of individuals and communities across the globe who've experienced this restoration, freedom, equality and justice, just as God intended for his people. You may not know this, but the number of people living in extreme poverty across the globe has actually halved in the last 50 years. So this work really does make a difference. In the countries that Tearfund's been working in, we've seen millions of people lifted from material and spiritual poverty through the work of our local church partners. And it's because of the continued support of churches and individuals across the UK, such as yourselves, that we've seen this incredible transformation. But you don't need me to tell you that the need is still great. You only need to watch the news or look around you to see that we're still living in a broken world. Families who've been forced to flee their country due to conflict, farmers who can't feed their families because the rains haven't come, individuals who don't have access to the skills or training they need to lift themselves out of poverty. And when we're faced with all the statistics and the images on our TV screens, poverty and injustice can seem like huge giants that we can't possibly hope to conquer. But then remember that David beat Goliath with just 5 small stones and God on his side. So that story itself reminds us that giants can be stopped in their tracks. Jesus promises there will be an end to poverty. And we, the church, this body is part of this. At Tearfund, we do believe that an end to extreme poverty is possible. So we won't stop until poverty stops. So we continue to follow Jesus to places where the need is greatest, to places like the Democratic Republic of Congo, known as the DRC. The DRC has a population of more than 80 million, and it's the second largest country in Africa. It's very rich in natural resources, and yet it's one of the world's poorest countries, with 87% of the population estimated to be living below the poverty line. Poverty in the DRC is fueled by brokenness, with the country devastated by repeated conflicts down the years. Relationships have been broken, and turmoil is ongoing. The country's not just economically fragile, it's socially and politically fragile. The DRC is what we now call a fragile state. But broken countries and communities are no new things. In our rather long reading from Leviticus, we saw in great detail that God gave Moses a number of instructions for the Israelites, precisely because he knows that brokenness and injustice are a part of our world. So he gave them these laws to help them address some of the key issues that he knew would become stumbling blocks for them. These laws are laid out in great detail, which are essentially concerned with how the Israelites should treat one another, how their social relationships should work, their economic security, and the stability and well-being of the whole Israelite community. God's intention was for the Israelites to live in a way that reflected good, healthy, honouring relationships with God, with each other, and with creation. But alongside this vision of life as it was meant to be, this passage also acknowledges the reality that society would gradually drift further and further from God's intentions. And as this happened, some families would become poor such as we read in verse 25 and actually in several other places in that passage. And some would be tempted to take advantage of each other. And some would find that they needed to sell themselves into bonded labour, as it was mentioned in the very last verse we read. So God wanted to establish a system that encouraged justice to be right at the heart of their community, so that redemption and restoration, liberation and renewal could be experienced by all. And so the year of Jubilee, which was to take place once a generation, every 50 years, would restore Israel and the Israelites to the life that God intended. For example, by mandating the return of people to their original homes, every family and clan could redeem the share of land God had given them when Israel was established. Jubilee provided a counter to natural successes and failures, to greed and exploitation, another sin that led to growing inequality and poverty. Ultimately, it restored Israel as a just society in which all creation could flourish under God. And just as God longed for the Israelites to live in a just and fair society, Jubilee reminds us that God's heart today is still for justice and liberation for everyone, individuals, communities, whole nations. In the DRC, with 87% of the country's population living below the poverty line, the needs are certainly great. But that means so too is the opportunity and the desire for restoration. And God's people are carrying his light into some of the hardest to reach places. And as they do, we're seeing incredible transformation. There's now a time to watch a short film. So the small village in the northeast of the country where Birungi lives is so remote that from the nearest town called Bunia, it takes three different modes of transport to reach her community. From Bunia, you drive by truck to the river, then you take a boat across the river, and finally you a motorcycle down a narrow track to her village. I'm not quite sure where you get the motorcycle from in that. Perhaps you take it on the truck and the boat. Many people would be put off by this long and arduous journey, but as God's agents of change, inspired and driven by the relentless love of Jesus, our partner in the DRC called Action Entraide is committed to bringing hope and restoration to Birungi and other women and families like her. See, by empowering people with the skills and training they need to lift themselves out of poverty, Action Entraide is living up to its name, which in French means self-help. This approach to development also goes by the name of church and community transformation. And this is really becoming a model for the way in which TFM works all over the world, because it's not about people being given handouts or aid, but being equipped with the tools and training to build strong and sustainable futures for themselves. So with livelihood building initiatives like their skills workshop, Action Entraide are enabling people like Birungi to discover that the answer to poverty actually lies within themselves, as was said in the film. In so doing, their dignity and self-worth is restored. Birungi was the eldest child in a family, and coming from a poor rural family, she, like many girls around her, was expected to stay at home and look after her younger brother and sister, and she was therefore never given the opportunity to go to school like the boys in her village. Instead, the long-term plan for Birungi was to get married to an older man when she came of age, in order to get a dowry and bring financial stability to her family. However, Birungi was blessed with an uncle who believed that there was so much more for her and told her about the skills workshop that Action Entraide offered to both men and women. This opportunity gave Birungi the chance to start rewriting her future. And with this training, as we saw in the film, she's been able to find stability and economic independence. She also grew in her faith and understanding of God as she spent time with the teachers, and her self-belief blossomed. Birungi says, "God's word says we're all equal." Her eyes have been opened to the God-given potential inside of her, and she's using her gifts and skills to run a successful business in her community. She's no longer brought down by the social brokenness that labels her as just a woman. She's seen differently by those within her community. And not just that, she's discovered her true self-worth as the child of God The passage we read from Romans says, "For those who are led by the Spirit of God are the children of God. The Spirit you received does not make you slaves so that you live in fear again. Rather, the Spirit you received brought about your adoption to sonship. And by him we cry, Abba, Father. The Spirit himself testifies with our spirit that we are God's children." And that's exactly the experience that Barungi has had. She's now confident of her identity as a precious child of God. She no longer lives in poverty, but has been set free. She's got the ability to choose her own path and overcome the limitations put on so many young girls from poor families in DRC. Hers is a story of redemption and restoration, and in our 50th year, it's these stories of redemption and restoration that we not only want to share, but we want to repeat them, be part of writing these into the future. The passage we read from Luke was near the start of Jesus' ministry when he returns to Nazareth, where he'd been brought up. And on the Sabbath day, he goes into the synagogue, he gets the scroll of the prophet Isaiah and reads the passage from it. And in so doing, he applies these verses to himself and his ministry. And what in effect he is saying to his listeners is that he had come to make the Jubilee that we read about in Leviticus, to make the Jubilee possible, that the year of the Lord's favour, which is a direct reference to Jubilee, was for everyone. This is no longer an ancient law that the Israelites were unable to fulfil, but one for his audience then and their neighbours too and us today. He was saying that his mission was God's mission and that he longed for his disciples to follow his footsteps and bring liberation, freedom, restoration and redemption to their communities. So in the DRC, Tearfund's local church partners are doing just that, bringing good news to the poor, setting the captives free and helping people like Barungi rewrite their futures so they no longer have to live in poverty. They're given this knowledge, skills and tools they need to build a sustainable future. And as we know, we are his disciples too. By restoring people to God, Jesus makes it possible for his disciples to live in ways that pursue these values of Jubilee. As the body of Christ, we are called and commissioned to bear witness to the gospel. We're called to be a new community that marks the kingdom of God. And so God is calling us, his church, forward to meet the needs that still exist in our fragile world, to meet those needs head on, to bring restoration where there's brokenness, to be a channel of his relentless love in everything we do. And so he speaks these words of Isaiah 61 over us as his church today. The Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is on us, because the Lord has anointed us to proclaim good news to the poor. He sent us to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim freedom for the captives and release from darkness for the prisoners, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favour. Barungi said, "Without my training, I'd still be at home, without even enough food to live on. I'd be suffering." That could have been her future. But instead, she's now a successful businesswoman, and she's viewed very differently in her community. She's got options, a hope, and a plan for the future. But poverty in DRC is rife. Women in particular are given very little opportunity to learn skills or receive the training they need to be able to lift themselves and their families out of poverty. So many other women, just like Barungi, haven't yet been given the opportunity to rewrite their future. In our 50th year in Tearfund, we have a vision to see 5 million people restored from material and spiritual poverty. Alone, we know this vision would just be impossible, but with the support of churches and individuals like you, and with God, we know this vision is achievable. And so I want you to invite you to be part of this. When you came in, you should have been handed one of these leaflets. I've got plenty more here if you haven't got one. In this, it's suggested that by giving £12 a month, you can enable two women in the DRC like Barungi within the course of a year to learn business skills and to flourish. Now that's just a suggestion of what your money could do. You may be able to give £12, you may not, you may only be able to give less or more. It doesn't matter. Each month your support will make a huge difference. So if you want to accept this invitation and start transforming lives today, Fill in your details on both sides of this card and hand it to me at the end of the service, and we'll do the rest. If you don't have your bank details, or you need to talk to your family first, you just want some time to think about it, that's absolutely fine as well. Fill in as much of the form as you can, and there's a box here that you can put your name and telephone number in. And if you do that, then somebody will phone you in the next few days. And they always say they're lovely people from Tearfund, and that's certainly been my experience. There'll be no pressure, but just to discuss with you what you might want to do. Now, in a moment, we're just going to play a short slide sequence which has a number of images from the DRC. So do take the opportunity to spend a few moments while this is playing to reflect on what you've heard, what God might have been saying to you during this morning. And then at the end of the service, we're going to say a prayer written by Archbishop Justin Welby, especially for Tearfund's 50th year. Once again, thank you so much, and God bless you.